Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we are once again joined by our official World Cup correspondent, Mr. Zach Gotti. How you doing, Zach?
What's up? I'm good.
Guys, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little emotional.
How can you be good, Zach? How can you be good? It's over.
I know.
Wow. Tyler's taking this harder than any of us.
It's been a very tough couple of days.
Yeah.
We are recording this on Tuesday, July 17th, so we are 2 days removed from the World Cup final. It has digested. It has sunken into us, and I think now is the appropriate time to decompress. We're going to go ahead and talk about the final. We're going to give our opinions on the final, but just so you know, we're going to talk about the awards that were given out, and then we're going to each give our official moment of the World Cup, what our favorite moments was, and our favorite goal of the World Cup. But first, we're going to start with Sunday's World Cup final action, France versus Croatia. France wins it in regulation 4-2. They win it with a goal from Antoine Griezmann from the penalty spot, a goal from Paul Pogba, a goal from Kylian Mbappe, and an own goal from Mario Mandzukic, who also scored for his own proper team, Croatia, along with a banger by Ivan Perisic. But let's go ahead and start at the beginning. Gentlemen, what'd you guys think of the game? What were your opinions? Did it play out how you expected it? What'd you think?
I mean, it kind of did play out the way I expected it. I mean, like, whereas, like, Croatia, like, fought really hard and just really was going 100 miles per hour the whole time. But at the end, France was just better. Mm-hmm. It was very exciting, though. More exciting than I thought it would be.
Zach?
It was a very exciting game. It played out the way I expected it to a degree. I mean, I thought France were going to be a lot more defensive than they were. Mm-hmm. They were more attack-minded in the final. Well, obviously, I mean, the prize is off the grab, right? Mm-hmm.
But I disagree with you, Zach. I thought they were very defensive.
Well, I think Kante was incredibly defensive. I don't think that the full team was. I think after Griezmann got his penalty, the game kind of started to open up a lot more.
After the second goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, once Kante got the yellow card, I was kind of like, oh, no.
Well, Kante getting the yellow card was a tactical decision. But, yeah, once your best player, or what we think is his best player, don't look at the official FIFA team of the World Cup, because it'll just make you mad. But yeah, once Kante got that yellow card, you realize that they had to be a little more cautious. It was reported also, I mean, I guess let's go ahead and jump into Kante while we're at it then. Kante was substituted out early in the second half, and Nzonzi came in and took his spot, and it was a moment where I'm standing at the bar, and it was me and the four or five other people around me looked at each other like, what's going on? And granted, Kante was playing well, but not to his standards, and he was kind of having like one of those weird games. It was reported later in L'Equipe, the French newspaper, that he was fighting a stomach virus. So that could kind of aid to it as well. But yeah, I was very surprised to see that Kante wasn't at 100%. But even then, I thought Paul Pogba did a great job defending. That back four did a really, 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 really good job defending. And the front four just hit him on the counterattack like normal. That's how they played him. Croatia did open them up, though, like what you were saying, Zach, after the second goal. It opened up a little more.
It was a game of skills, really. Mm-hmm. Just errors that allowed for goals and things. But I mean, it was probably one of the most exciting finals I've seen in a while.
Yeah, for sure. We got goals.
We got plenty of goals. Like most finals ended like 1-0, 2-0. So yeah, no, that was a fun final.
Yeah. Tyler. I was gonna ask you your opinion, Tyler.
Yeah, it was from everything I've heard, is that most World Cup finals kind of are, you know, 1-0 matches. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very defensive, very often a stalemate. But this was very exciting. And it was weird because even though France won by, like, 2 goals, I don't feel really, like, on the pitch they were decidedly 2 goals better. But, like, I think you guys were kind of talking about, like, they just kind of let Croatia was basically playing into their game.
Mm-hmm.
And Croatia was doing a good job, but it's so, I mean, you can only do so much when you're playing into the hand of your opponent.
Yep.
Like, even your best effort, oftentimes when you do that, is not enough.
Yeah, it frustrates me when people say, like, oh, but Croatia was the better team. They had more possession, they had more shots, and that's all those, using those stats to say that a team is better is completely irresponsible, and I think is just not smart by someone who would claim themselves to be a football fan or soccer fan. Because you got to realize that if France wanted to have possession, they would have. Like, they allowed Croatia to play the ball around because what Didier Deschamps had decided to do this entire tournament is to defend and hit the counterattack, because he got these players to buy into this system. And it's cool. I was listening to the Total Soccer Show, my favorite soccer podcast, and they were saying that the difference between this France team, managed by Deschamps, and the golden generation of England with the Lampards, with the Gerrards, with the tail end of Beckham, Scholes, Giggs is Welsh, Scholes, you know what I mean? Those players, was that they never found one system for them all to play, so it was a power struggle between who was going to do what and who was going to do this. They never played into one basic system. I mean, think about it. You have players at the highest level. You have Paul Pogba, N'Golo Kante, Antoine Griezmann, Blaise Matuidi, Kylian Mbappe. Coming off the bench, you have Fakir, Thomas Lemar, Ousmane Dembele. You have these players that there could be this power struggle as to who does what. But because Deschamps implemented a system, because Deschamps stuck with it and got his players to buy into it, France won this World Cup. I feel like France won the World Cup because of Deschamps and not in spite of Deschamps. It wasn't that the players came up with something and kind of carried a mediocre manager to a title. The manager implemented a system that the team then bought into. And you could see throughout the whole tournament the chemistry between the team. They all liked each other. And that's important when you're spending 6 to 8 weeks with someone trying to win a tournament and play 7 to 8 games, you know?
Team chemistry is important, especially in this game where it is a team game, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, and I agree. Just from my point of view, they played an interesting style, and all that you guys told me is about how people widely criticize it, but it won them the World Cup.
I don't think any of them care.
Yeah, I mean, I who would rather be the person complaining about it? Because, I mean, sticking to their ideals about what soccer is, or... Mm-hmm. The person celebrating winning the World Cup.
So yeah, you know whose name is written in history? Paul Pogba's. So let's take that as we will.
I'm gonna be so disappointed if he doesn't bring that same energy back to United next season.
See, but Zach, I'm gonna crush your dreams right now. It's not him though.
I need that.
I do think we finally got the answer. One big question with Paul Pogba is, what is his best position? And yeah, for the longest time, his best position was thought to be a 3-man midfield where he can roam and be creative in there. And while he played in a 2-man, a bank of two with Conte, I feel like maybe Mourinho was taking notes while watching the World Cup. And maybe you see something roll out like that. Hopefully, for you as a United fan and my father, you know, hopefully that works out for you guys.
Maybe, but I think the inclusion of Fred might, open more room up, but that's a different discussion.
That's a different one, yeah. That's a different one. But yes, I want to go ahead and move on to Croatia, if you guys don't mind. Luka Modric, I saw an article on, I think it was Vice Sports, that said was basically describing to the general public who Luka Modric was, and the tagline was "Your favorite footballer's favorite footballer," and it was so accurate because of what he does on the pitch. Luka Modric was coming down, going back to the center backs to receive the ball, playing the ball forward. He was given more freedom up front in the attacking third of the midfield, so we didn't have to worry about tracking back as much, and he created those moments of flair. Him and Paul Pogba, when you see them, when you saw them throughout the game, Pogba made a ridiculous pass for the Mbappe goal, where he just kind of turned his hips, and you saw all of Croatia shift over, and then he played the ball, a diagonal ball opposite to the other side for Mbappe to pick up. Modric does those same kind of things too. I just, nothing but respect for Modric. Perisic's goal was a banger in every sense of the word.
It was beautiful.
And it sucks that, it sucks for the Croatian people that they lost, but to me it sucks that there were so many other goals in this game, because if there weren't as many goals in this game, we would be looking at this goal and going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It's kind of like that goal is going to get kind of like covered in dust because it wasn't as vital. You know, it was the first goal. It was the equalizer, so it was nasty. And in the moment, we were all excited. But the memory's not going to live on. Kind of like the Mandzukic goal where Lloris, I don't know what you were doing, but the play that cost Lloris the Golden Glove, if I'm being honest.
Oh, true.
You know what I mean? That's going to be forget. Yeah, exactly. Oh, true. In any other situation, that is huge, you know?
It's very much like the Liverpool goalkeeper.
Oh, Karius?
Yeah. That was his name.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I got an alert today saying that Liverpool were going to make an $80 million bid for Karius, which would be like a 63-64 million pound bid for Alisson, the Brazilian goalkeeper. He's playing for Roma right now.
Karius needs to go.
Karius needs to go.
Need to come get Mario Mandzukic, though.
Really? You want to take him from Juventus?
Somebody to come and get that boy, because, oh my lord.
Oh, man. Like,
how do you, I mean, that should be a record in itself, right? You score for both teams in the World Cup final. Like, how many?
That's only happened one other time, and I don't know it. I saw it on the ESPN bottom line. They like gave out that stat.
Mario Mandzukic is the second person in FIFA World Cup history to score for both teams
in a World Cup final.
Legend.
I saw a great tweet by a friend of the pod, Tyler Renfro, also known as Poor Bucks Fan.
Poor Bucks Fan Tyler, yeah, our boy,
who tweeted, technically, this game is actually tied 3-3. He's like, give us some more soccer.
Oh my gosh, but yeah, it was an open game because there were early goals, and it was. I personally saw it at the same bar that I saw the Colombia England game at, and it was packed. I tweeted a picture from my personal account. That bar was packed. I was like at the bar limit. Like, I was standing right behind the row of seats at the bar. It was just a great day. It was a day. It was just happy. I enjoyed the final. The game was entertaining, and it's everything that I love about sports, soccer in particular. You know, brought a bunch of people together that no one knew. I met this guy who was in Charleston. For the listeners, I'm in Charleston, South Carolina for the next 10 months. So I was in Charleston, South Carolina, watching a game at a soccer bar next to a guy wearing a Nottingham Forest jersey who was from Nottingham and lives in New Jersey and flew down with his wife because his wife's best friend was getting married here. And he was like, yeah, we flew in last night, but the wedding is tonight. I just... My wife is getting ready and doing all the wedding stuff, but I was like, I'm going to go watch the game at a bar. So I just Googled the best bar, and I showed up here. And I was like, oh, because I brought him. I was like, hey, are you a Forest fan? Like, you're wearing Nottingham
like
Forest.
Actually?
Yeah. And he's like, no, yes, I'm from Nottingham. And, you know, we got to talking and stuff. And you meet those cool people, you know. I met a bunch of people who work for a Volvo company factory here. They were all like soccer hipsters and stuff. I met a man and his fiance that they made a deal that if France, because she was like half French, that if France won the World Cup, they would name their firstborn son Killian.
Yes.
To which I responded, "Wow, you're very generous." I would have said, "We need to name our firstborn son N'Golo," but whatever. Could you imagine a short Hispanic kid running around. N'Golo!
N'Golo Fernandez.
N'Golo de la Espriella. Get over here. But like, yeah, that's the joy of
forecast. That will be the name. That will be N'Golo will be in one of Sergio's children's names.
Listen, to my future wife, to the future mother of my children, if you're out there listening, I'm so sorry. Oh man, but that's the beauty of football. That's the beauty of soccer. And I'm just sad to see the World Cup come to an end. But I'm also happy that we got an outstanding tournament, you know? We got a great tournament.
I had such little expectations for Russia.
Now, okay, as a tournament as a whole or as an England fan?
As a tournament as a whole. Okay. Like, I was like, I don't know. This isn't one of, like, the big places we usually have World Cup tournaments at. Mm-hmm. At least since I've been alive. So I was like, I don't know. Russia, I mean, I don't know, you know? And I was like, this is whatever. But honestly, like, it's been the best World Cup I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've only had one game in 64 matches. One game.
It was 0-0.
It was 0-0.
France, Denmark.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. So, like, I was like, all right, so what's Qatar going to do when we go to Qatar? What are we going to see? Is it going to match up?
And I'm going to tell you right now, it won't. Simply because, and it's sad to say, but I think it's important to mention, this is the last World Cup that will ever be like this. I feel like when we're in our 60s and we're talking, we're reminiscing about, you know, great things, and my grandkids are asking me, abuelo, what was this like or whatever, I'm going to tell them the 2018 World Cup was probably the most enjoyable World Cup for me, and it's the last of its kind, because now you mentioned Qatar, or Qatar, however you want to say it, but it's not 4 years later, it's 4.5 years later, and it's going to be played November to December. So it's going to be a different mentality. It's not that summer. We can't go out. I went to the beach after I saw the World Cup final. I went to a bar, saw the World Cup final at 11 a.m., had 3 beers, was a little bit tipsy, got some Five Guys, and went to the beach. That was my Sunday. Like, that's not going to happen in November, in December. Granted, we will have some good soccer on Thanksgiving, which I'm here for, but it's not the same. And then after that, in 2026... that's the first World Cup that's going to be expanded to 48 teams. So it's just going to be a completely different style of tournament. Will it still be the World Cup, and will it still bring the world together, and will it still be exciting? Of course it will be. Am I ecstatic that the World Cup's going to be in the United States, Mexico, and Canada? Of course I am. But if we're being realistic here, this is the last one of its kind, you know? And it's the last one where Messi and Ronaldo were at the peak of their power, and we each got, I can argue with you later on in the episode, that we each got one beautiful moment of brilliance by Messi and Ronaldo each, at least one. And it's just the last time that we're gonna see it like that. You know, things are changing. Change is not something to be afraid of. I've had a lot of change in my life, and I fully embrace it. But, you know, just take the moment that this World Cup, it just means a little bit more, just because it's the last one of its kind, you know? And it went so smoothly, surprisingly.
It went incredibly smoothly. Mm-hmm. And I think what the best part about it was the fact that, like, the times were so accessible mm-hmm. to watching the game.
For us over here.
Us over here. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was, like, 2 games every day, and you just could sit there and you could watch one and go right into the other one. You could legit spend every day watching the World Cup.
Yeah.
And you had the rest of the day to do whatever you wanted to do. And I think that was cool, especially for like me being out of college, you know, being able to have nothing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it came at the right time for us. It's our first summer post-grad. Yeah.
I don't know what y'all are talking about. What is this
post? Hey, listen, like, I keep getting emails and notifications on my phone about renewing my student season tickets, and I cry every time. I just want you to know that, Tyler. I cry every time.
I'm sorry.
I know.
Yeah, but one thing I also think contributed to this World Cup mm-hmm. is that and this is just my, from what I noticed, is that especially when you got to around maybe probably the quarterfinals, I felt like there was a legitimate reason to root for every team that was still in it.
Elaborate.
I mean, just usually when you get to playoff, there are teams that are like the villains.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you got to the semis, it was like, I was like, I would be happy if any of these four teams won.
Mm-hmm.
And like there were, I think there were really good storylines, and the teams that got farther along were easy to follow and they were easy to root for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you didn't like Russia, for example, like even if you don't really care, like it's a cool storyline to see Russia advance as far as they did.
Well, you always want to see the host nation because you get to see the host nation fans, and that's always exciting. So,
I don't really think there was a villain team, because like usually there for most, you know, any sort of sporting event that I've seen, any sort of sporting tournament, there's kind of a villain.
Well, for me, it was Mexico, but that's just because I'm a U.S. national team fan.
they got eliminated in the round of 16. So
what's new? What is new, Tyler? Death, taxes, and Mexico out in the round of 16.
Wow.
They haven't advanced past the round of 16 since 1986. They beat Germany, and they all went crazy. And I said, you guys need to calm down because your goal, they were good enough to make the semis. I thought they had a good enough roster. I think Juan Carlos Osorio is a good enough coach. I just think they needed to buckle down, focus, and not get distracted. But as the Mexican national team fans are, as the Mexican national team is, they win one game, they start to show their peacock feathers, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're so great. And then, yes, they end up winning their second game. And then Sweden comes in and says, oh, word? I'm going to put that clap in you. They beat them 3-0. They end up getting sent to play Brazil, to still, in my eyes, the best team in the tournament. And the reason that they lost to Belgium was because Casemiro was suspended. They end up getting smacked and getting beaten 2-0 and being humbled down to earth. Can't talk stuff if you can't back it up. I don't want to hear this talking.
That might be the hottest take I've ever heard.
What? Which one? Which of the four takes that I said in that rant?
I did not expect Sergio to go that far in. The Mexican national
team. I'm so tired of them, bro. I'm so tired of their arrogance. Bro, ask any Latin American soccer fan, non-Mexican, what they think about the Mexican national team. And they'll all say they are arrogant, they are cocky, and they don't deserve the arrogance. They've never won a World Cup. They haven't advanced past the round of 16 since 1986. 1986! Come on, bro. LeBron has been alive longer, less, like, come on. Can't get on me with this ish. Come on, guys. Listen. And you know me. I can take my fan brain and I can take my analyst brain and I can separate them. And listen, Mexico had a good enough, I enjoyed watching this Mexico team play. They were fun to watch when they were attacking. And they were talented enough, and they had, I think they had a good enough coach to go far in the tournament. But if you're going to talk your talk, and you still going to show up flat, it's like the kid when you play pickup basketball that keeps running his mouth how he's going to shoot threes all day and goes 1-for-17 from 3-point every single time. So you just stand there and you go, all right, shoot. Like, I'm not going to guard you. I'm not gonna take you seriously until you get that monkey off your back. That I'm gonna be real with you, Zach. Colombia, England, and penalties. When they went to penalties, oh, we got this. England can't shoot penalties. And what they do, they prove me wrong. And when you prove me wrong, my hat's off to you, nothing but respect. Mexico, prove me wrong. But you can't, cause you won't. 2-0. That's all I gotta say to y'all boys.
2-0. You came for the
match. I love that they actually lost by 2-0.
Of course they did, because that's what Mexico does. Track back. No. What were we talking about? The good part of the World Cup? That's what we're talking about, right? The fun stuff?
I take everything I said back. There was definitely a villain.
Then it was Mexico. No, but
there was not a villain past the quarterfinal.
But
there was not a villain past the round of 16.
I don't know if the Mexican
national
team,
because the villain got out in the round of 16.
Here's my thing. I don't even know if the Mexican national team knows what the quarterfinals are. Like, are they aware that the tournament continues? Are they aware?
They must have just thought, damn, We lost the World Cup. We lost the final.
Sorry, Sips Tea. Oh, man. But what you said was right, Tyler. I do not think that there was a villain in the later stages of the tournament. And I even, being serious here for a second, I don't think Mexico was a real villain. Like, they had a good team. They put this, they inspired faith in their country. They gave them that hope. They gave us one of the best games of the World Cup, which was that Germany-Mexico game. It was a great game in the World Cup. Like, they gave us some good stuff. I like Juan Carlos Osorio, their manager. Carlos Vela, I really like, representing MLS really, 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 really well. Chucky Lozano, like, they got players, man. They got a squad. Wait, can I go back to my rant real quick? How are you going to dye your hair blonde in the middle of the tournament?
Here, there it is. Drag them.
How?
Go in.
It's I understand that. I criticize people who say, oh, Paul Pogba focuses on fashion and music and dabbing and stuff too much. And this is exactly what I'm doing to Chicharito. But, like, tell me. Explain. America, explain, bro. How is you going to dye your hair before the third game of the group set? You know what that tells me? You know what that tells me? That they weren't focusing on bunkering down and protecting themselves against Sweden so they could win the group.
This is an old man yells at cloud moment for you.
This is full-fledged get off of my lawn. I am going full-fledged in. You kids, turn your music down. It's 9 o'clock. I'm trying to go to bed. That's what I'm doing right now. But you know what? It is what it is. I can do it. The U.S. wasn't in this tournament. My primary number one team wasn't in this tournament. I had to go through a World Cup without my favorite soccer team. The audacity.
Good thing that it was the most entertaining one we've ever had.
Oh, my gosh. Can we just go into moments of the World Cup now? Because, like, I'm heated. I need some happiness in my life now.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Our next segment in today's World Cup, Sergio, tell me how you really feel episode of Sideline Judgment. We're going to go ahead and talk about our favorite moments of the 2018 World Cup, along with our favorite goals. And if Tyler and Zach ever decide to catch their breath, we'll go ahead and begin the segment. Fine, I'll start it then. I'll start with my moment. I said this during the group stage, but my moments of the World Cup, it can be multiple ones because there were a lot, had to be the Peruvian and Panamanian national anthems played for the first time. The national anthems in the World Cup are one of my favorite parts, regardless of the country. And the Colombian one, because I have an emotional attachment there. Same with the Peru one. But also seeing, there's that video clip of the Panamanian journalist listening to the Panama national anthem for the first time at the World Cup, and they're just hugging each other and crying. That kind of moment, you know, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Like, those moments of nationalistic pride are just some of my absolute favorites. If we're talking about on the field, Toni Kroos's goal against Sweden at the very, very end of the game, that was one of my favorites. The Lukaku, I see. Here's the thing: that goal, I think
we're
Lukaku,
all of them.
Not all of them, but also the final goal in the Belgium Japan game where Lukaku has the off the ball run. That one, and then of course, I think I'm gonna take yours, Zach. Ronaldo's free kick. That boy was a mad ting, bro. That stuff was insane. That goal was ridiculous. I saw a clip today of Reddit's like top 10 goals. Of our soccer's top 10 goals, and the Ronaldo goal was number 2, and just the angles, the way that it went, so good. And my personal favorite, I don't think you're going to take this one, the Messi goal against Nigeria. Which one?
The one where he took that touch, he like came, the ball came down, and he was like, the one,
and he took the touch. The one where he decided to rewrite physics for a second, and like, allow the ball to just gracefully, like you're putting icing on a cake, just gracefully put it on his thigh. Yeah. And then he decided to control it with his right thigh, put it on his right foot. He's left-footed, by the way, I'd like to remind you. Control it there and then take a shot, or control it with his left foot and take a shot with his right foot to score. To me, it was when my kids ask me, Papi, why do you worship Lionel Messi? Papi, why is there a shrine of Lionel Messi in the basement? that's the goal that I'm going to show them. That's one of the goals that I'm going to show them.
Why does Uncle Zach keep trying to tear it down?
Because he's a Ronaldo guy.
Zach
and my boy Day-Day are constantly sending me reasons why they think Ronaldo's better than Messi, and you can't change my mind. You know the gif of change my mind? That's me. Messi's better than Ronaldo. Change my mind.
Oh my gosh.
So those are my moments, my highlights of the World Cup. Also, the picture of the president of France celebrating the first goal. Have you guys seen that picture?
Oh, that was amazing.
We'll tweet it from our official Sideline Judgment Twitter account. I'll tweet it when we're done with the episode. I'll tweet it when you publish the episode, Tyler. That to me was one of my favorite moments. And anything in N'Golo Kanté. Literally anything in N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté. I want to learn the song that they sing, just so I can.
In true Sergio de la Espria fashion.
Well said, too. Way to put some respect on my name. I love it. This World Cup's taught you a lot of things. I'm very happy about this.
In true Sergio de la Espria fashion, Sergio has answered the questions of moment and goal of the week. By like four each,
of course, because that's what I do.
So, Zach, what are your best?
We can repeat moments of the World Cup. Like, I don't own the moment.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, it's just our personal favorites. You know, you guys were too busy laughing at my rant, so I went first.
I'm still not over that. I'm still not over it.
I need a recording of that just to play.
Well, luckily, we're gonna have to publish this podcast.
No, but like I'm just gonna take your segment and I'm gonna play it when I get upset. I just wanna listen
to that. I'm gonna set it up as my alarm.
Wonderful. And that's good because it's a full like 3 to 4 minutes, so you got time to wake up, stretch, get up, wash your face. You got all time to do stuff, bro. All right. One of you two, give me your moments and goals of the tournament.
Moments and goals. Okay, so I agree with you with the Panamanian national anthem.
Mm-hmm. National anthem, period. They're just great.
The national anthem, period. But I think those teams that were in there for the first time, mm-hmm. and you saw the pride, and everyone was singing, and tears were coming streaming down players' face. Yeah. Like, that was beautiful.
The Colombian, Panamanian, and Peruvian national anthems, hearing them being sung, not just like by the recording that they played and by the players, but by the crowds. That's what brought me to tears. I cried with every Peruvian and Colombian national anthem. No flex. That's exactly what I did.
Brazil, when the Brazilian national anthem would stop, and then they'd keep singing the rest of the song. I thought that was dope. Mm. Second moment would be, obviously, England getting to the semifinals.
Oh, an applause there for your boys. That's deserved for you guys. Well done.
Would be whenever England scored and like all the fans would like throw beer in the air. I mm-hmm. love that. All about that. Ronaldo's goal, the free kick, mm-hmm. the hat trick. The look on Messi's face when Argentina got knocked out.
That's just rude.
My favorite thing about that was that he like somebody came up to like hug him like good game, and he literally like they hugged him. He literally didn't move. His hands were on his hips, and he was just still looking at the score. And, like, it's almost like he didn't even feel them.
I loved every second of that. Like, I'm not a Messi hater.
No, I know.
Ronaldo, but, like, I just loved every second of that. Mm-hmm. I just loved every second of that. I was laughing the whole way through.
Can I add one to mine?
Go.
Radamel Falcao, speaking of like my favorite players, Radamel Falcao scoring his first World Cup goal for Colombia. Very happy for El Tigre. He scored the third goal in the 3-0 against Poland, and the entire country just you could feel the entire country happy for him. That's our captain, El Tigre, that's our boy. Go ahead, continue.
And then another one, I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but in the final, Modric did this turn that I have never seen.
Oh before. My god! Yeah. And he played the ball out to Perisic.
Yeah, when he turned, kicked behind him, returns around and gets. I was like, what did he just do?
Did you see the moment in the final? It was like in the it was like in the 85th minute, so it was like super late. People were already like talking about France and whatever. But Modric nutmegs, I think it's he like does a turn and nutmegs someone. I think it's Theo Hernandez. And then plays a ball out to like Rakitic or Mandzukic or Perisic or something. And I looked at the Nottingham guy next to me. We're having our beers. We looked at each other and went, woo! And just kept drinking because, man, he deserved the golden ball. Deserved the golden ball.
That boy was serious. Mm-hmm. So I think those are my...
Your moments? Yep.
Those are your moments. I probably add Kylian Mbappe scoring.
Or I'm just like, emerging. Like,
yeah.
I think that's it. I think that's all my moments, my favorite moments that I legit kind of like freaked out about.
Right. Yeah. Tyler?
Well, start with what's easier. The two like favorite goals. Mm-hmm. One of them has to be Pavard's kick against Argentina.
Oh, the Pavard slice.
Just filthy.
How did we forget?
I was hoping that neither of you would take it.
I completely forgot.
It's so weird for him because like I remember hearing that like he wasn't even starting as going into the tournament.
No, and actually shout out to the U.S. men's national team because we drew with them 1-1 in Paris, and the player that was playing in Pavard's position just got burned by Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie in the midfield when they would drift out to the sides. And because of that, I think Pavard was put in as a starter. So, you're welcome, France.
True. Yeah, and then the other one would be Modric's goal against Argentina.
Oh, my God! I forgot. If you watch that goal just from the filthy back camera angle, it's like watching Pavard's goal. How when you see Pavard's goal from that in slow-mo from the back camera angle, you see it curve in that Matrix style. Same thing with the Modric goal. When you see him... It's that the cool thing about that goal is that not only is he like 33 yards out, but he receives it. He does a step to the left. I think it's Mascherano bites, and then when once Mascherano bites, he just taps it with his right to set it up, peeks up, and just does a rocket, launches it, and that ball just curves and goes past Willy Caballero. Oh my lord!
Filthy.
So good.
Those are my two favorite goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite moments, it's hard for me. I don't have a historical understanding of this the way you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I agree. Probably some of my favorite moments are watching teams hear their anthem play for the first time. Those mm-hmm. are great. England's win in penalties was just fantastic. It's probably my favorite moment.
Thanks.
But... sorry, Sergio.
It's good. It was a good moment. It was a good moment. It's...
African fans are like, yeah!
How does it feel to be like the one team that couldn't beat England on penalties?
Well, let's clarify things. My number one team is U.S. men's national team, and I've said that from day one. Don't come at me. I've said that from day one. I support Colombia and Peru because they are culturally... part of me, you know, I feel them. Peru's an adopted country of mine. Colombia runs through my veins. Honestly, in the moment, I was sad. I did cry for a couple minutes. And then, like I said, that one English fan put his hand on my shoulder and he said, hey, man, great game. That's football. That's the beautiful game. It's highs and lows. And when I saw that acceptance and I saw that love, that unification of what sport gives us, that's when I was like, you know what? That's when I was fully on board the It's Coming Home campaign. That's another thing. Listening, another cool moment of the tournament was watching the growth. Watching England fans say It's Coming Home go from satire to, oh my God, wait, it could come home, you know?
Right. I think every year we kind of do it. Like, mm-hmm. every year we're kind of like, oh, yeah, we're going to win a chip. It can come home, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Like, we don't know if it will happen or if it won't happen. But the way it kind of unified everyone together and the ridiculousness that went on because we mm-hmm. were just mm-hmm. having so much fun, like that was amazing.
I love the supporters rendition of Earth, Wind, and Fire September, like, oh, da-da-da-da-da. And at the end, they go, football's coming home. That to me was a hey, 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 da-da-da. That was a cool chant. I was a big fan of that one. And I told those guys when I left the bar that day of Columbia, England, I said, hey, you're going to beat us. Bring it home. Like, don't knock me out for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
I was fully on board that. That was, yeah, that was another good moment. That was another good.
I think that another great moment, in my opinion, was, and it's not like I took a lot of enjoyment in this, but it's for what it brought,
mm-hmm.
Was when it was official that Germany was knocked out in group play.
Ah.
It was like, in that moment, it became like, all right, so the defending champion will not win this.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I mean, it was going to be interesting no matter what, but in a way, it kind of made everything else more interesting.
Right.
It's like, okay, it's a new team.
It's like if the Warriors were knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. It's like, so a new team will win this.
Right.
And I personally think, and I don't know, but it landed, I kind of like it. I don't like it when all the big dogs get eliminated early from playoffs and tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's
well, a weird you want to see like the you want to see the highest quality in the biggest stage.
Yeah, it's like it's for like the NCAA tournament. Everybody loves knockouts in the first couple rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, most people want to see the big dogs fight late.
Yeah,
because they want to see the highest quality.
I want to see Duke, North Carolina in the Final Four.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's like I don't want all big dogs, but like with the World Cup and how many teams are in it, just and I don't know the nature of this tournament over others.
Mm-hmm.
It's like. I liked seeing that another big dog was out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the whole stat you brought up that it was the first World Cup where Argentina, Brazil, and Germany didn't make it to the semifinals.
Yep, correct. At least one of those.
At least one of them didn't make it to the semifinals.
You brought up something, Tyler, that I've been thinking, and it's a question that I'd like to bring up if you have time.
Yeah,
but, do you think this is the end of the South American dominance in the World Cup? Do you think European teams now have a formula for going against South American teams and advancing further into the brackets?
I think football, like anything, is cyclical. And I feel like right now we are seeing the results of a generation, maybe two, maybe three generations in Europe. You see it in France. You see it in the young generation in Spain. You see it in Germany. You're seeing the Belgian generation be at their peak right now. You're seeing this young generation in England coming up. You're seeing these teams, pretty much the only traditional big European powerhouse that doesn't really seem like it is Italy. You're seeing these teams kind of harvest that young generation where I think in the early 2000s when we had R9, you know, the Brazilian Ronaldo, when we had Messi starting to come up, Suarez, Cavani, Di Maria, Aguero, Tevez was at his peak. Go to Colombia, James is the tail end of that group. Cuadrado, I can just go on and on in different countries. Like, I feel like it's a cyclical thing, and going off of that, I feel like that's why I'm very, very excited about the U.S. men's national team coming up, because we are seeing the results of the first real generation that has grown up with soccer being a big thing. You got to realize that the Donovan, Dempsey, DeMarcus Beasley generation grew up with soccer not being as respected, and these kids grew up not having a MLS didn't exist. And as much as people like to make fun of MLS, even though I think it's ignorant nowadays because it has grown, it is not a top five league in the world, clearly, but it is not the laughingstock that it used to be. You know, it has quality. If you sit down and watch it, you will notice that it's got quality and it's improving. And if you want to support,
more than anything else, everybody knows what it is.
Exactly. Even if you even if you're not a soccer person in the United States, you understand that there is a premier American soccer league. You know, this is the first generation of players that's growing up with that being being the norm. You know, it's normal. Yeah. It's not taboo. It's normal. You don't have to go to an indoor game on a Thursday to see an old legend play. You don't have to. Soccer's accessible. We wake up every year. Tyler, we're going to have access to every Fulham game. Every Fulham Premier League game of the year, we're going to have access to. Zach can watch his beloved Manchester United from his home in Florida every Saturday morning. It's accessible. We can watch the Bundesliga whenever we want. We have beIN Sports that carries La Liga and Serie A. We have Fox, used to cover the Champions League. I forgot. I think it's going to Turner Sports next year. It's going to carry the Champions League.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Could you imagine on a Tuesday night, on a Tuesday, right, tuning in the afternoon to watch Real Madrid go up against Tottenham in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and then later that night watching the Lakers play the Warriors on the same channel? Think about that. Think about the exposure that the sport is having now. So because of all that, that is now normal. We have this generation that's taking it seriously and is moving abroad to the best players moving abroad. And I feel like that's something that has just kind of been honed in Europe. Because the infrastructure has been in place for decades and decades and decades, you just have that young generation that comes along every one, two, or three generations, and that's what's happening. I don't think it's the end of South American quote-unquote dominance. I just think it's shifting, you know, the paradigm shift. And that's one of the beauties of soccer. The fact that soccer, to me, I think why I love it so much is as an artist, as an actor, as a writer, as a musician, amateur, all that stuff, you know, whatever. As someone who is an artist, the game of football, the game of soccer is art. And it's art in all aspects. It's probably everything but the transfer window is art, you know what I mean? From the gameplay to the tactics to the style that the players
are. That's art.
Is art, yeah, it's art as to how many zeros I could put next to Ronaldo's name. Yeah.
What Liverpool have done this transfer season or are about to do is mm-hmm. art.
is it art or is it just a really good accountant?
Fakir, they're about to buy Fakir, right?
They bought Naby Keita. They reignited talks. They have Keita. What'd you say, Tyler?
So they are thieves then?
They're the thieves? No, I think that... Art no. The, oh, art thieves?
Yes.
Listen, you've been watching too much Pink Panther.
True.
To answer your question, I just think it's cyclical. I think all those things that I mentioned, I don't think it's an end of dominance. I think in 15 years, you look at Peru. Peru's got a good young team and a great manager that can kind of push them up into the echelon. Brazil's not going anywhere. Look at Brazil. Brazil ain't going anywhere in the next 4 years, at least. These players can make it into the next World Cup cycle in their prime. But even then, you look at players like Gabriel Jesus 2 years ago. 4 years ago, Gabriel Jesus was watching the World Cup from the slums of Brazil. 2 years ago, he moves on to Man City, and he's in a World Cup. Football changes, man. Football moves. Soccer's it's a moving sport in all aspects of it. So to answer your question, I think it's cyclical. But I'm excited to see what this young French team does in the future in the Euros. I'm excited to see this England team in the Euros in 2 years. I'm excited to see if Croatia can make one last run in the Euros with that team. I'm excited to see if Belgium can make one last push because their players will still be at the tail end of their prime. See what happens. Lukaku in 2 years will be 30, which is right in the middle, you know, there. Hazard's going to be 29 in 2 years. Like, you know, these players, it could happen. It could happen. Tyler, I want to ask you a question before before we move on and just before we kind of wrap things up here. As someone who all right, let me rephrase this. Tyler, as someone who has just gotten into soccer seriously, because I feel like this is the first, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first World Cup for you that you watched completely, like seriously watched, like not just casually watched or whatever, like you intensely watched it.
That would be correct. Then, because the last I watched the last one, but only the parts with the U.S. men's national team.
Exactly. Yeah, you were. You see, here's and
I didn't follow the sport of the World Cup. I followed the U.S.
Right. And so this is why I feel the growth of the game is so important. you as someone who was the literal, you were the demographic that when the U.S. didn't make the World Cup, I was afraid of losing. The people that would watch the World Cup because it was just the U.S. and not because it was the World Cup, you know? Now that you, the U.S. wasn't in it and you watched an entire tournament, what is your perception of soccer? What is your opinion on the game now, 4 years later, 4 years older, 4 years wiser? What is your opinion of the game? And I know that we've already agreed to become Fulham supporters, but honestly, like, just how deep do you want to be invested? How much is the game calling to you? And where does the game rank on your, like, you know, my favorite sports kind of thing, you know? Because I know for you, number one is college football.
Yes.
So, and I'm not expecting it to replace the number one spot. I just want to know, did it go from like 7 to 4? Did it go from like 5 to 3? Did it go from like 6 to 2? You know what I mean? Like, where did it rank on your personal? Because I feel like you're the perfect demographic to ask in that position. I want to get a, and I know you will. I know you'll give me an honest answer. So,
well, spoiler alert, it will not be taking the number one spot.
I'm fully aware of that because you sent me text messages about the song for the college football season. So we'll go with that.
Yeah, that's a topic for another day. But yes, I mean, what I'll say is this is going to be treated as kind of a joke, but it's kind of serious. Watching this World Cup has made me desperately wish, like, it's made me desperately wish the U.S. men's national team would have been better and we were in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't,
Sergio, don't I say agree anything. With you. No, I agree with you. I'm just,
but it's a matter of like, before when the U.S. men's national team was disqualified, I was like, that sucks. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really care that much. I was like, that sucks. We'll get to watch them. But watching this World Cup is like, this is something, and this is something that I would want the team that I would associate with to be a part of. And I am so desperately, and with the way soccer works and that it's 4 years, the next World Cup is in 4 years, like, I'm so desperately now invested in finding out how good or how we can be good to get back in it. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of this. I have felt that this World Cup specifically has done wonders for me with the interest in the sport. I know a lot more players. I know a lot more about the game, though still not nearly enough, in my opinion. But what I'll say is that, like, and I know we've joked about here about being committed to being Fulham fans, but, like, I'm legitimately excited for the Premier League season. Mm-hmm. And I want to get invested. Right. And I want to learn because, and I know it's never going to reach this height that it was for the World, because it's the World Cup. Mm-hmm. But to see the game that means so much to so many people, I mean, I want to be a part of that. I want to appreciate that because I didn't really appreciate it more. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, it felt like a sport that you played when you were in elementary school, and then because that's what it was for me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm very invested. It is definitely bumped really high up in my kind of association of sports. I mean, college football, NFL are still above it. I would put college basketball above it too, just mm-hmm. because I've watched that longer. Since I don't have a team, I think soccer is more interesting to me than the NBA. Mm-hmm. Just because
to me too, Zach. Zach is making a face of shock and awe.
Well, I don't have a team. So,
well, I mean, the NBA. I have a team, and I still think any random soccer game is more entertaining than NBA. But I love the NBA. Like, for me, it's soccer number one, basketball number two, college football and college basketball tied for three, and then like the rest is just whatever, or NFL after that, but the rest is whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm college football, NFL, which, and then college basketball, and then I think soccer mm-hmm. would slip in right there. And then, I mean, it's kind of just a mix up of sports beyond that. Postseason college baseball gets inserted in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Postseason college baseball and softball goes there somewhere. Yeah. But I think that this World Cup has done a lot for me in that I, like I said, I'm legitimately invested in what is about to happen in the Premier League season coming up. I'm legitimately invested in finding out about the U.S. men's national team. I mean, I know I can't do anything, but like finding ways, like looking at ways to that we could be better.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I'm very glad that that's the effect that the World Cup had on you. And I'm taking you seriously. Like, we'll start with the Premier League. It's the most accessible international one. We can watch MLS as well.
It's good to know that there's so much access to soccer.
Exactly. And I feel like something that would be good for you as well is the Champions League, because it kind of gives also another kind of international pride type thing, because it's teams from all over Europe. So you get that, like, you can get a team from Spain playing a team from Germany. You can get a team from Switzerland playing a team from England. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got sort of that thing. So we'll start with those in the first year. We'll watch
on another note, completely unprompted. This is not a joke. Completely unprompted. I was followed by Fulham Focus Twitter account.
Oh?
It is a Fulham fan page. Completely unprompted. I followed back, of course, but...
There we go.
If that gives you any indication,
we have to follow back with Sideline Judgment or our Sideline Judgment account too. We got to follow them back. Oh my lord!
Zach, my dad, how this is escalated.
My dad tweeted and he was like, "I don't understand why you're going to be a Fulham fan." So did my boy Daddy. My boy Daddy was like, "Why are you going to be a Fulham fan?" And I was like, "Guys, we're supporting. You know, we're doing our God, Dad. Oh my gosh."
Like I Sergio, I've always if you want to back out, I'm giving you an avenue. I will be a Fulham fan.
I don't have
whether or not this is a good idea. Can back out of it.
Listen,
I don't know if these waters are shark infested waters or not, but I'm diving in them anyway.
Tyler, I will hold your hand the entire way. We are in this together. We are friends, we are partners, we got this. I will be with you, a Fulham fan. And it'll be nice to follow one Premier League team rather than just kind of watching whatever. It'd be nice to be invested.
When United rock Fulham, let's do another podcast, right?
100%. And you know what?
Let's do it.
And you know what? They probably will. But it is what it is, you know? That's part of the game, you know? That's part of the game. Hey, we'll be like the Panama fans. We'll just be happy.
They just get back to the Premier League. I'm going to ride with them when they suck so that one day when they get good, throw it in all of your faces.
We got this.
Well, Tyler. Really just Zach's face.
Yeah, we got this. Oh, man, guys. It was a great World Cup. It was a great tournament. I'm going to miss it. 4.5 years. We got to wait now for Qatar. We can have a Qatar the
Two
problems.
Years.
We can have one of those podcasts later on about our disagreements with the way that the Qatar government is treating people building it and the problems with the Qatar World Cup. But right now is a time of happiness, and we enjoyed.
Winners, dude.
Yeah. Shout out France. Shout out N'Golo Kanté. Shout out Paul Pogba. Shout out King Kilian.
Do you see the French players like bombed Deschamps' press conference?
I loved it so much.
And they just started singing.
Full of energy. Did you see the scenes from Paris when they arrived? Oof.
Yeah.
Scenes, man. I loved it. Gentlemen, anything else to say about the World Cup before we head off?
We're missing our winners.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Real quick. Our winner, 100% France. We all knew that. In third place, we had Belgium in the... I don't understand how these teams can play twice and not mean anything in a World Cup between Belgium and England. Croatia, obviously, taking second place. Golden ball given to the best player of the tournament is given to Luka Modric. As we have stated previously in this episode, reasons why, outstanding player. The young player of the tournament was given to none only than King Kylian Mbappe. I just don't think, Zach is bowing down right now. The Velociraptor, as Tyler likes to call him. No questions there, no arguments there. The Golden Boot is coming home. Harry Kane with 6 goals. Harry Kane of Tottenham. Granted, it was like, what, 3 penalties? Like
2 penalties, 2 headers,
and a tap-in, right?
And a couple tap-ins,
A goal is a goal, and a Golden Boot is a Golden Boot.
Smooth Golden
Boot. He joins Gary Lineker as the only other Englishman to win the Golden Boot. Congratulations to him. Golden Glove was given to...
Hair.
Yes, Golden Glove was given to Thibaut Courtois of Belgium, who is rumored to be heading to Real Madrid. Exactly. Yeah. Cough, cough by Zach. Yeah. I think Hugo Lloris lost it with that Mario Mandzukic.
Oh, definitely.
I feel like they were on the fence and they were like, you know what? It's better to go with Courtois.
Lloris put in a tremendous performance, but after that little mishap.
Yeah, like, exactly. And I think that's it, right? Those are all the awards. Those are all the awards. Congratulations to all of them.
All that I'm aware of.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, anything else before we sign off and say goodbye to the World Cup for another 4 years? Realistically, we'll say goodbye to the World Cup because the World Cup technically starts with qualifying. So we'll be back in like 18 months with qualifying. But yeah,
you gotta explain to me how that works, because
Tyler, that's a pod on its own. We don't got time today. Oh boy, we don't got time today. But yeah, so
explaining World Cup qualifying.
We could do that. We could do that, but it'll take a while.
We'll spend like 10 minutes on the offside rule.
We'll spend 10 minutes as to why UEFA has 14 slots and there's like 8 groups, and like you have to win your group, but if you come in second, you got to do another playoff. But then if you win one of the playoffs, you also have a secondary playoff with another. It's a weird, weird system. But yeah, so that's our World Cup coverage. Oh, Zach, I want to thank you on behalf of myself. I know Tyler as well, on behalf of the entire Sideline Judgment crew, which is literally us. Thank you very much for being our official World Cup 2018 correspondent. We will have you back, hopefully, with all of the soccer coverage and even some other sports. Even some other sports I know you got some knowledge in as well. You're not just a one-trick pony. So thank you very much. Thank you, Zach, for coming on, being our guy. Zach Gowdy, it didn't come home, but Zach was on our pod, so thank you so much, Zach. Hey.
Hey, Zach, go get yourself some Florida Gators Jordan brand gear to make yourself feel better.
You know I'm about to.
Zach about to max his credit card out with those threes. With those custom Jordan threes. It's over, dog.
My Instagram is going to be pictures of my feet just the whole time. Like, you see me?
Wait, real quick, shout out CC Jefferson for talking all that smack. I love it. But yeah, so that was our World Cup coverage. Tyler, what's next for us?
Well, I'm going to be debuting my coaching ranking article.
Yeah, you are. On our newly, we're about to launch our blog portion of Sideline Judgment.
Written portion.
You will have articles.
Get to hear our voice.
Yes.
In interpreted writing.
Yes, you get to use your brains for that matter. I'll be writing some preseason stuff for some soccer stuff. I'll also be writing some more stuff as the football season commences and about to kick off. And
got a couple features lined up.
Exactly.
Let's work on. But yeah, I'm going to be debuting my coaching ranking article, where I went through an extensive process and I ranked from 1 to 130 all 130 active FBS coaches.
Spoiler, Lane Kiffin is number one. He's not, but whatever.
Well, we will debate it on the pod.
We'll debate it on the pod. And we will also talk on the pod. We'll have our college football as a whole preview. We'll have an SEC preview. We'll have a Florida Gators specific preview. Needless to say, we are very excited for the college football season to be starting.
So excited!
We are so excited for this. Gentlemen, this has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. Thank you so much, Zach. Thank you. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
There we go. I forgot the tradition we did there.
Also known as Fulham Fan.
Also known as Fulham Fam A and Fulham Fam B. Tyler's Fulham Fam A. This has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. This has been another World Cup. We are not biased. But go soccer. The beautiful, 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 beautiful game. We're not biased.
Go soccer.
But go soccer.